It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn investing skills to grow personal wealth and financial empowerment for all people. Call in with your question about creating generational wealth in difficult financial times and market investing. The number to join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ange Matthews is an investment strategist and coach, founder of The Happy Investor Method. Ange, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you're a first generation investor, and we're going to go back to that turning point for you at the start of the Great Recession in 07. You're working your first full-time job, making $40,000 a year, and you have all this student loan debt. What was that turning point like? Why did you invest?
Well, I invested because working $40,000 a year, and at the time living in New York City, I didn't really have a lot of options for discretionary income. There was no room for fun. And at the time, it was a bit of a toxic work environment. So I was really stressed out and I couldn't see a way out. And so I asked for a raise and they said, we don't have it in the budget. And I thought, how am I going to make this work? And I simply Googled, how do you become rich? And it said, you're going to have to either start a business, get another job, or start investing passively. And I thought, well, I can't get another job because I'm already putting as much as I can. So I started learning how to invest.
Were you scared to leave even a low-paying job with benefits with some security of income?
Well, I didn't initially leave right away. So okay. I decided to start building up a safety net originally. And it was really scary because I didn't know what I was doing. And instead of saving, you know, I could have put that money towards my savings. I took a portion of my savings and I started investing it. And initially, it was really nerve-wracking.
And you started losing some money at the beginning when you were just starting out investing. What did that feel like?
It felt hard because I think growing up in a lower middle class home, as well as not being taught how to invest in school and watching movies like Wall Street, there was this little voice inside of me always saying, who are you to do this? Why are you doing this? No one around you is doing this. It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And so the second the market started going down, which was the early onset of the what we now know as the Great Recession, that inner voice jumped right in and came out and said, see, I told you so. But I think my drive to want to know something better, to have more. And also when I did my research on self-made millionaires or people who did have a more comfortable state of life or way of being, it was a non-negotiable. They used their investments. And that's what really kept me pulling through.
So if the average American household has more than $96,000 of debt, that's 2021 Experian data, what type of strategies do you recommend to get out of debt and to make your money work for you?
Well, I definitely know what it's like to have debt and having over quite a bit of it. I know that it has a bit of an emotional stress that comes with it. And a lot of people experience this. And some people, they want to tackle it head on and they say, I'm going to pay it all off and I'm going to be debt free. Other people, they say, I'm going to pay none of it and I'm going to put it under the rug and act as if this isn't even here. And a lot of folks just pay the minimums. But for me, what I think about and what I like to tell our students is you want to try to have a win-win where you can pay your debt, which is you in the past, right? That's all debt is. It's you paying for actions that you did in the past. And you want to also pay yourself in the future. And so this is where we're going to start thinking about not everything has to go towards debt that we have, but we want to start thinking about it in a way where if I can put something towards my debt and think about, well, instead of living lavishly, or if we can cut a little bit of our spending out and not just put that more towards debt, but put that towards investing. So now there's something of a counterbalance towards that debt. There's something making money as well as something taking money. Well, then we're building more of an equilibrium. And so if you have debt, pay it, but you don't necessarily have to go all in debt free. when you start thinking about how to make your money make money, well, now we're starting to bring some balance to the relationship.
Striking a balance. Ange Matthew is with us, a wealth strategist and investment coach, and we're talking about how to build generational wealth. With your questions at the forefront here, join in at 800-642-1234. So you developed the Happy Investor Method. How do you identify money goals using this Happy Method?
So we lead with happiness and the emotion of happiness, because when you survey most people, the first emotion that comes when they think about investing into money, it really is lack of confidence, it's fear, it's anxiety, it's stress, and I completely get it. And so off the jump, we want to say, no, this can actually be happy. And it starts with a choice. You choose happiness. And a lot of people think that if you were to become rich or if you were to have a lot of money, well, money is the root of all evil. A lot of us heard that growing up. Or if you watch a movie, the villain in the movie is portrayed to be the wealthiest person in the city and they're using their money for evil. So we like to start off the conversation by saying, no, money is a tool and it's going to have the energy that you want to have. So if you want it to be happy, it's going to be happy. If you want it to be sad, it's going to be sad. And what we do is you want to start thinking of the strategy more so in a way of, well, what is going to make you happy in life? And how can your finances and your money support that? So when you're not happy, and typically speaking, a lot of people say even between the ages of 18 to 34 have the highest level of financial stress and anxiety, 63%. And that is a really high number. So when we think about happiness, and if you're doing anything to make your financial situation better, well, you're increasing your happiness because you're bringing down that stress and that anxiety.
But if you're just trying to stay ahead of bills, keep your head above water, there's not much joy or even much bandwidth to explore your happiness and money and your money values. How do you break away from that survival mode in personal finance?
I think the first part is definitely gratitude. So if you are in a pool of water and it seems as if you're drowning, you're going to naturally feel as if you're drowning, right? Versus if you pick up your legs and float, it's going to feel a little better. Now, either way, the money's going to go. You're going to have to pay your bills and you're going to have to pay your debt. And if you're especially living paycheck to paycheck, you're going to have to go through that process. The only thing you can change is your emotion and your mindset towards that. And what I like to tell our students, as well as our community, is if you can appreciate this and step towards it with gratitude versus I have to do this, have it be, I get to do it, well, then you're going to start facilitating more dialogue around this conversation. So, okay, it's bill time. It's the 15th of the month, the first of the month. I have to pay these bills. Well, no, I get to pay these bills. There is money in my account. And maybe there's not a lot left after this, but oh, thank goodness, there's money in this account. I actually have a job that's putting money into this account and I get to pay for these things. And then you can actually start evaluating, are these things that I really need? Is this what I want my money to do? If it is, wonderful. If it's not, well, you can cut that relationship and see what you can do to start creating a little more money. And that's why I started investing, because after budgeting and seeing what was left, there just wasn't enough. And asking for a raise wasn't in the equation. So I started taking things like going out to dinners as much or buying really nice gifts for my family. I started writing handwritten letters and painting, and I took that money and I'd buy my parents stock, or I'd be more thoughtful and intentional about the financial impact of what I was doing.
Investment strategist and coach Ange Matthews with us, creator of the Happy Investor Method, helping people develop a strategy and investment portfolio with personal money values. Call in at any point with your question about saving and investing, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn how to invest and grow generational wealth through what's called the Happy Investor Method, focusing on long-term stock investing as a means to financial freedom. There is space to talk about money issues and your approach to investing. Call in with a question or a comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have investment strategist Ange Matthews with us. Ange, I'm really curious about how you live off of your investments, how you withdraw, and how, I mean, I certainly see your on-ramp for buying stocks, but how do you advise people to withdraw investment gains to pay off debt or just to pay for expenses?
So when you think about paying off anything, you want to think about liquidation. This is really what the question is. Mm-hmm. When you invest in something and say it's doing really well, there are two things you want to think about. One is, do I really want to take it out and take it out the game now? And so I always think about, imagine you have LeBron in the game and he's doing extremely well. And imagine this could be a stock like Apple and it's making you a ton of money and you want to liquidate it to maybe take a trip to Egypt. Well, do you have to take this trip to Egypt right now? Is it something you really want to do? Can you get this money elsewhere to take the trip? Do you really want to liquidate this asset because it's doing so well? And if the answer is yes, there are no other options, then go for it, right? Because you invested for a reason and you get to be rewarded for that. But on the other hand, you want to think about two things when you liquidate. You want to think about what are the tax implications. And so if you do happen to take it out of a retirement account, and if you're not at the appropriate age, for some of us, it's 59 and a half, you want to check in with your tax accountant or a tax attorney just to make sure that you're doing what you should, not to get penalized. The other thing you want to make sure when you are taking out your investments is you want to make sure that you're monitoring if you need all that you're taking out. So a lot of people, what they do is they liquidate all of their investments and they might not actually need all of them. So remember what I said about taking LeBron out of the game before he needs to be out of the game? Well, maybe he doesn't need to come out for the entire game. Maybe there's a way to just take him out for a quarter and then leave him in for the rest of the game. And so you want to start thinking about liquidation in that way. And that's the way I set it up. And that's the way that we teach it. You want to start planning ahead. So if you know that you want to retire in a certain amount of years, or if you know that you have a child that's going to college, or you want to purchase a new home, you want to start thinking about, well, in 2 to 3 years, I'm going to need this amount of money. And it gets a little technical because we do think about it in terms of interest. And we think about our savings earning, 2% interest if you find a really good one. Or you think about your raise coming from a boss. Okay, maybe you'll get 2 or 3%. But when you start thinking about investments, what's really great is that the market brings back 8% annually over time on average. But if you do stock analysis, which is what we advocate, if you understand how to analyze companies, well, you can get anywhere from 20 to 30%. Of course, this is not a guarantee and investing has a risk. But once you do that, you can actually calculate, if I stay the course, I'm going to make this much. And that's how you can start planning proactively. So it all starts with a plan and then you work your way backwards. You never want to take out everything because you never know what the future is going to have. And you always want to check about the tax ramifications
because
you never want to be hit with a tax bill.
Yes. Any profit you make from selling a stock, that is taxable. And that could be very concerning at tax time.
It can. But it's never a reason not to start. A lot of people say, I don't want to deal with the taxes, so I'm not going to start investing. Hmm. And I say, if you make $100, do you not want to keep 90 and give away 10? I'm okay with keeping 90, aren't you?
Dave from Grantsburg called in to ask you for more specific advice about investments. And Dave is wondering, what are the best dividend stocks that you see out there? Or what are you seeing in terms of CD rates?
Wonderful. So dividend stocks, you can actually Google Dividend Kings. And these are a list of companies that have been giving dividends for a long period of time. I love dividend stocks because this is also a really great strategy to not get taxed. You don't have to liquidate the stock, but they're giving you paychecks, whether it's monthly, quarterly, or annually. And this is really beautiful because it's that passive income that we all love and desire. And for CDs, that's another question. And CDs are really interesting because I find that you might actually get a better interest rate in a high yield savings account or a high yield treasury account more so than even a CD. So you might want to just check in before committing and locking your money in for a certain amount of time. You might very well find a better rate.
You open custodial brokerage accounts for your family. What should people understand about this type of savings account?
I love custodial brokerage accounts because it's a way to not only save for our relatives and loved ones, which a lot of us are very comfortable with, but it's a way for this money that we're putting aside to actually grow and have a life of its own by the time they need it. So for our kids, particularly, we have custodial accounts and even having retirement accounts for our children, which is crazy to think because our kids are, 5 and under, but this is really helpful in thinking about the long-term gains. When I think about these accounts, you want them to be in assets that don't really need a lot of involvement. And so funds are great to put in accounts like this, companies that you think are going to be here way longer than you and I, companies that are here for a very long time. And again, this is a really great opportunity for you to not just put money aside, but an example, when people are graduating, I have a client who just, got in, quite a bit of money for her daughter from her mother, and she doesn't want to just give it to her daughter to save. She wants to open an account. And I told her the story of when I invested for my mother and when my mother was retired, and I took just about $6,000. And I told her this was just, 10 or 15 years ago. And now that account is worth 96,000 bucks. So just think in 10 or 15 years, if you do the right thing, it can have life-changing impact. And so, if you want to think about this for your family, having custodial accounts are amazing things to do. You can search for it by just Googling custodial brokerage account. You're going to get a ton of articles that pop up. Call the number, actually, call the number for the bank that you're thinking about. They have tons of resources available to you, and they love speaking to potential clients.
Investment coach Ange Williams with us, founder of the Happy Investor Method, aiming to make investing accessible. You can join in with your question at 800-642-1234. Ange, just a bit of a follow-up here on those custodial brokerage accounts. Could they reduce your child's financial aid eligibility when they apply for college? I mean, what about this brokerage account versus like a traditional 529 account?
This is a great question, and I'll quickly tell you why. So, when you think about custodial brokerage accounts and financial aid, I love to have retirement accounts, especially if you're thinking about financial aid, because the retirement account, it's for retirement, and so it doesn't have to be considered for financial aid and for school. That's not the purpose of the account. So I do love to use retirement accounts over just regular custodial brokerage accounts. Also, at the same time, the account doesn't have to be used for some states, whether it's 18 or 21, for that child. And so they can't force you to liquidate assets, especially when you're initially applying to school before the child is of age to actually have this account. And so that's something else you want to consider as well. And over, say, a 529, when you have a brokerage account that you manage, it does not have to be used for education, and you can invest in individual stocks. So for some 529s, you'll get put into a fund. You're not entirely sure what that fund consists of. You don't know if it's aligned with your own investing values and goals, and you don't know what the performance of the fund is doing. Versus if you choose a custodial account, whether it's a brokerage, regular brokerage account, or a retirement account for your child, you can say, hey, my child loves Nike shoes, so I'm going to put Nike, or we buy them Apple products left, right, and center. We're going to invest in Apple. You can give it a way more tailored approach to your child. So that's why I advocate you can either do both or you can do one. But if you do have a retirement account, that is a way to go around, say, the financial aid consideration.
We only have a few moments left. Very personal question, though. How are you inspiring women of color to invest?
I think personally, my existence is proof that women of color can exist and not have to do it all on their own, which is something that we have been raised with, right? You have to be strong. You have to be the leader. And if it's up to me, if it's to be, it's up to me. And whether I'm a woman of color, a woman, or just someone who hasn't come from a traditionally wealthy background, I think this is a very consistent narrative. And when I talk about investments, I talk about it as if this is my backup plan. This is the forward plan, the backup plan, the sideways plan. This is what helps me sleep at night to know that if something should happen to me, it's not just me out here. I have a whole slew of companies and institutions that will help my legacy, that will help me carry out my dreams.
Ange, thank you for joining us. Ange Matthews, investment strategist and coach. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.